And now join us to talk about the question of whither Citigroup and also whither the Obama economic transition team here is Jody Kantor, who's a reporter for The New York Times. Jody, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Marcus Mabry, international business editor, at The New York Times, is right here in the studio with us. Marcus, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure being here.
Let's start with the Citigroup. And Jody, I noticed that, the Citigroup story here really is a sign that what was going on during the prosperity of the Clinton era, when the likes of Robert Rubin, et cetera, were running things, maybe wasn't as secure as we all thought. You have a major profile of Robert Rubin and the proteges that apparently are going to be named to Obama's transition team. What do you make of this Citigroup story in light of what you've written about Robert Rubin?
Well, actually, that story was written by somebody else, but my colleague Jackie Combs, I think, did a great job bringing together all of the Rubin proteges that are now going to populate government. There's this crew of young, talented, mostly male, very brainy, very academically minded young managers and policy wonks and economists who came together under Rubin as Treasury Secretary. Their sort of signal experience was managing trouble in the international markets. A lot of them went into private enterprise afterwards. And now it looks like they're sort of headed back to government as a group.
Right, absolutely. Well, Jody, forgive me for confusing you with your colleague, and your piece on Valerie Jarrett is on the front page of today's New York Times. What do we make of the personalities from the Clinton sort of team? What does that say about Obama's suggestion that he's going to change things? A lot of talk over the weekend was that, this doesn't represent change.
Well, I think the thing to remember is that the Clinton administration was a big place, and people had a lot of diverse experiences there. One thing I'm looking forward to asking some of these people in interviews is really what their time in government was like, because I don't think it was a unified experience at all. Also, it just shows that Obama is not really interested in taking risks right now. The economy is too precarious. He's reaching out to people who are known performers, who are well-known in the Democratic community and have worked in the White House in Washington before.
And Jody, among all those familiar names, though, your front page story about Valerie Jarrett points out influence of someone who is not as well known nationally. Tell us what you've learned about the kind of skills that she's going to bring to the White House and in some ways be very protective of the Obamas, who she's very close to.
Well, that's what's so interesting about Valerie. We have all of these names who are so familiar and fairly trusted figures and people who have served in government for years and years and years. And Valerie Jarrett is kind of the outsider member of the administration. She is a Chicago civic leader and businesswoman, and as you say, very, very close friend of the Obamas. The Obamas talk about her in almost maternal terms, even though she's only about 5 years older than them. And she's got a mix of roles. They're bringing her to Washington. She's got two very real jobs in very defined jobs in the White House. She'll be in charge of intergovernmental relations, so she'll be the contact for state and local officials. She's also the public liaison. She's going to try to make good on that Obama promise we've heard about so much to sort of build a channel between government and local citizens. And she'll advise Mr. Obama, but she's also being brought there a little bit as first friend.
But she's been described from people that I've spoken to in Chicago. She's got this incredible reputation for being a strong diplomat. And even in your article, you talk about how she was essentially the liaison between the black community, the leadership, and the representatives of the Clintonites, and was there really to support Obama as he made decisions from the very beginning when he decided to run for office.
Yes, absolutely. Obama is a man of many mentors, but she is chief among them. She's part of the small group of top mentors. And I think that you're right. I mean, she's got a lot of skills, but the one that she is best known for is managing relationships. Vernon Jordan, who's actually related to her, told me that Valerie could tell somebody to go to hell and make them enjoy the trip. and Al Sharpton, Reverend Al Sharpton, has told me something else that also made me laugh. His name for her is Miss Reality, because she's very good at delivering tough news with a soft edge.
Well, that's interesting. More quotes like that will probably be coming out. Marcus Mabry, before we go in this segment, Timothy Geithner, the markets loved that appointment yesterday.
Oh, yeah. The markets loved it. The question is, you know, as we were pointing out earlier, will the market continue to love it? The problem is the market has loved every move that they've made to try to shore up and restore international confidence in our markets, especially in our financial institutions. The market has initially reacted with jubilation. It's brought up what have been very down markets. But then day two or day three afterwards, we see us plummeting right back downwards. That's going to be the question. Do we see another fall like that tomorrow or the day after?
Well, you know, whatever the condition of the markets, everyone is going to be looking what in all of these appointments represents Obama's specific vision and what represents this sort of team that he's putting together. Jody Cantor, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jody Cantor is a New York Times reporter. Her piece on Valerie Jarrett is on the front page of today's New York Times. Marcus Mabry is going to stick around with us, and we're going to get more into the sense of what is this team the president-elect is assembling.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. The economy is tough, but is it going to make you change your behaviors, like the $7 latte you can't give up, the enormous flat-screen TV you bought just because it's on sale? We're talking about how you rationalize the irrational. Tell us what you buy and how that makes you owe more. Tell us your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
John, with every day there's more news about who's in and who's out of President-elect Obama's potential cabinet, some political watchers are asking themselves, as we see so many familiar names floated, is whether or not they will really bring change that the candidate promised during the election. Marcus Mabry is with us to discuss, and we expect today that President-elect Obama is going to announce his economic team, and at the head of that would be Treasury Secretary, New York Fed Reserve President Timothy Geithner.
Geithner's a young, brilliant guy, 47, same age as Barack Obama. He has been at the center of this maelstrom that we've been trying to, the New York Fed has been at the center of trying to defuse as international crisis has sank in our financial institutions. So he could not be more steeped in the issues that they're facing right now, because he could not be more up to speed. At the same time, he has a long history with people like Larry Summers and people like Bob Rubin, former President Clinton's Treasury Secretaries, and is a great acolyte of theirs.
And he's certainly a new face and name, at least on the national scene for those outside of the financial world circles. But there's certainly been a lot of names that are very familiar, starting with Rahm Emanuel, John Podesta, who's leading the transitional effort. There's also Eric Holder, who many expect will be named the Attorney General. He was in the Clinton administration. So these old names triggers the question, is that change?
Well, there are a lot of those old names. As you said, Eudora, it's kind of amazing because I think in some ways it was when it was clear that Hillary Clinton would be going to state that I thought, okay, well, that means Geithner is going to be Treasury Secretary, because the other leading candidate for Treasury Secretary was indeed Larry Summers, who was Bill Clinton's Treasury Secretary. And I thought they're not going to put another Clintonian from a Clinton cabinet back into an Obama cabinet with already the list they have. It's got to be Geithner. It's got to be a young, best and brightest. there is this sense growing, I think, among some progressives and some left-wing bloggers that this is not change, that this is too many old faces, too many old Clintonites from a time that they didn't particularly cherish in government, the time of triangulation, the time of political calculation, rather than principles being driven by political concerns and trying to outfox your own even Democratic allies in Congress.
Well, specifically there, I mean, if the principal disagreement between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama during the campaign was over the vote on the Iraq War and whether you would talk with world leaders without preconditions in Iran and places like North Korea, why would appointing her Secretary of State not seem very, very contradictory?
Well, John, I think some of what we're seeing here is the fact of, reality, the campaign, what was said in the campaign versus the reality. And I think it's clear, and both aides on both sides have said that the difference between them was really a lot less significant than they all played up during the campaign. For instance, I think, and these are two controversial points of view, the first one is not controversial, which is when it came to that question of when would you sit down with world leaders with whom you disagree, especially Ahmadinejad in Iran. The Clintonians made it seem like, oh, Obama's naive and he'd sit down with any horrible dictator. The McCain campaign picked up on that same theme. That was never what Obama was suggesting, and they knew that at the time. So there's some politics in there. More controversially, and again, this is my own supposition. If Barack Obama had actually been in the Senate at the time of the vote of authorizing the war in Iraq, there were some Democratic senators who actually stood up, probably Ted Kennedy famously, and said, "No, I'm not going to vote for this war for this president because I don't trust them." Most of them, however, did exactly what Hillary Clinton did. And would Barack Obama have done otherwise? Would he have really voted against that war if he had been in the Senate rather than not have the luxury of not being in the Senate at the time?
Right. And if we all had a crystal ball and we could change the past, then we'd know the answer to that question. But I guess in this discussion about change, I'm just wondering, does change automatically have to mean new faces? Or is it a question of the dynamics of the people you bring together and the leadership? And let's listen to what David Axelrod, who was obviously very prominent in bringing Barack Obama to the point of where he is, let's listen to how he described it this weekend.
People need to understand one thing. There's one person who's going to be in charge of American foreign policy, and there's one person who's going to be in charge of American economic policy, and that's Barack Obama.
That was David Axelrod on ABC's This Week yesterday, and he is going to the White House as one of the advisors to Barack Obama. And so is that really what the change is about, is the agenda that Obama is going to set and then force these big characters, these larger-than-life politicians, these very accomplished people to all meld to that mission?
I think that's right. I think the change comes from being, number one, the vision from the top. And this is a vision we haven't seen, and a vision of bipartisanship also that we have not seen. We didn't see it under Bill Clinton. We didn't see it under George W. Bush. Obama's reached out to Republicans in ways that no one has in a long, long time. This takes us back to politics in America that was pragmatic, that actually cared about getting results, rather than being stenched in ideology and this whole, I will not change from the path I have started upon, blah, blah, blah. This is a return to competence and pragmatism, something we have not seen in our politics in a long time. And I think that's actually going to present real problems for the Republicans to fight against it. Because if Obama is reaching out to the center, if he's saying we're about good ideas, we're about facing a magnificent mountain of problems this country has not faced, at least probably since FDR, when you look at the military issues as well as the economic ones, I think Obama has change on his side.
Well, Wesley, what irrational purchase can't you give up, Marcus? Just we're asking everybody that.
Think about that. When we talk about that ridiculous latte, I'm making myself my partner. I make coffee every morning, and I say, you will take this to work and eat these leftovers. I was thinking about moving to New Jersey.
He's a smart guy. Thanks. Stay with us. Now headlines from Femi. Okay.
Good morning. The time is 29 minutes past the hour. Citigroup executives negotiated with federal officials until late last night to come up with a plan for financial help. They invest $20 billion in the company directly and back up more than $300 billion worth of securities and loans. The promise of help for Citigroup helped markets in Asia shrug off earlier losses, though not by much. Australia's main index closed up a little bit, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng closed down more than 1%. Japan was closed for a holiday. Two attacks in Baghdad have killed at least 18 people and wounded at least that many. Five were killed near the Green Zone when a female suicide bomber blew herself up at a checkpoint. 13 died in a bombing on a Trade Ministry minibus. A federal appeals court will hear oral arguments today about 17 Muslim detainees being held at Guantanamo Bay. They decide whether a federal judge may release the Chinese prisoners known as Uyghurs. They were cleared for release years ago but face torture if sent back to China. The Bush administration opposed their release. And in football, the Tennessee Titans no longer have a perfect record. The New York Jets beat the previously undefeated team 34-13.
Thump.
Shame.
Thump. Oh, Brett Favre.
So close.
I was wrong about him.
So
man.
Far.
Thank you, Femi.
Thanks, Fem.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org, and by the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world. Uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.